Here comes the terrible song again on the radio.
But I gotta admit, I kinda really like it. Why can't I let it go?
So in defense of lost causes, defense of lost causes show.
With Rebecca
and Brian
and a whole bunch of wreckers,
we'll tell you what we know.
We're not raucous
or pompous, we don't hold any office. We're just here in defense of lost causes. A defense of lost causes show.
Welcome back. Sorry, it's been a while since the last time we checked in.
Some of us have been very busy becoming teachers and doing homework and all sorts of stuff like that.
And blunt force trauma. So on this episode, since it's been a while, last time on we talked about Watch the Throne, the event album of the summer.
It's pretty funny because it seems to have, I mean, I still contend that there are good songs on that record, but it seems to have like come in with a bang and left with a whimper.
Yeah.
Like, people are talking about the live shows that Jay-Z and Kanye have been doing, and there's some excitement around that, but as we head towards the end...
I haven't heard that those are disappointing.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. All the people that I know who've gone or the reviews that I've read have been impressed by the spectacle. But as we head into the sort of final stretch of the year end, nowhere do I hear people talking about it as an album or a song of the year or something that's going to make a list, which both of those artists separately, every time they put out a record, ends up on a top 10 list.
Yeah. Furthermore, the kids aren't really listening to it that much.
Which is something that you now have a little bit of insight on now that you work full time with the kids.
So I am teaching middle schoolers in the Kensington neighborhood of Philadelphia, which is the ghetto. When Philadelphia Weekly, the alternative weekly newspaper, put out its headline story about the 10 biggest drug corners in the city of Philadelphia, all of them are in Kensington. All of them are in the neighborhood of my school. So that's the kids who I'm teaching. And all of them listen to hip hop. They're all big fans of like 106 and Park on BET. They listen to Power 99, the Philadelphia hip hop station. So I have firsthand insight into what the kids are listening to these days and what they make of it.
And not to interrupt, but from what you've told me, the thing that I am most surprised about is that you came in as a teacher and wanted to teach a history of hip hop lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And in
a
any
unit,
school
a whole
I've
unit.
In any school I've ever gone to, that would be the coolest fucking thing ever. Not only was it not the coolest fucking thing ever, but anything that is more than a minute old is corny to them.
Yep.
Like stuff that to us is classic, where it's like, oh, everything that came after, you know, that record is like a new time of hip hop. Like, is that even really considered hip hop? Like, anything that isn't current is lame.
Right, right. So that's the biggest overarching theme is that the kids, and it makes some sense. You know, when I was in middle school, you know, I keep thinking I came to musical consciousness around, I don't know, 1991, 92, and I thought the things that came out in 1988 or 89 were lame at the time. Now I can appreciate that stuff more, but at the time, I also felt like anything that didn't come out like this year was not for me.
I don't think I was that way, and I'm not saying that because like I had cool taste. I'm saying that because I feel like I came to musical consciousness somewhere in the mid 80s because I was a huge Madonna fan.
Yeah.
And all of that sort of 80s pop music really resonated with me. But we also listened to a lot of like classic rock radio in my house, and that was just as cool. Like it wasn't like, well, my dad likes Led Zeppelin and that's lame. Or even, like, there's something about Philadelphia classic rock radio that is obsessed with, like, Billy Joel, Elton John, and those artists sounded just as good to me as Madonna. I mean, I didn't want to dress up for them as Halloween like I did Madonna 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
But I didn't think they were corny.
But I think that might come from the fact that the parents of my students are our age, and in some cases younger, and they're listening to Top 40 radio now. And I mean, they might go back a little bit, but it's not like they're all listening to you know, Run DMC and Curtis
Blow. Well,
not
Run DMC, but like.
And I mean, they would have come up with Jay-Z, but to the kids, Jay-Z is like old news and he's corny. And I don't know. So it's very much like if it didn't come out in 2011, it doesn't matter. So anyway, we're going to talk in a little bit more depth about what the kids are listening to these days. And then we also wanted to introduce a new segment about movie musicals.
Because both Brian and I have some, you know, musical theater in our background. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, me way more than him. But rather than sort of talk specifically about musicals in general, we thought, which I think appeal to a rarefied audience because of how expensive a ticket is, you know, if you want to see something current on Broadway, we would talk about the kind of musicals that are available to everyone, the ones that you can see on your at your local multiplex, or really, for like my intents and purposes, at home on your VCR. And I don't say VCR to be anachronistic. I say VCR because like, that's where I fell in love with the format. These movie musicals.
Right, right. And we also have ongoing conversations about how that, I have this idea that you can best define your taste not by the best things you like, but sort of by what terrible things you're willing to put up with. So it kind of goes genre specific. Like, you know that you're really a fan of something if you'll watch a bad version of it. Like, if you know that it's not going to be very good, but it has certain key words or key elements that you are interested enough in that you will see a bad version of it.
Right.
So for me,
Brian's is
Spaceship, like or future dystopia. I will watch bad versions of that because even if I know ahead of time that they're going to be bad, I'll still enjoy it a little bit because, I don't know, it's a thematic world that I'm interested in. And for you, it's singing and dancing.
Singing and dancing. I do. I love it.
If there's singing and dancing, you will watch a good, bad, or indifferent version of it.
I know. It explains why we still have Glee on our DVR, despite
right.
the fact that that show has not been good for 2.5 years.
Yeah. It jumped the shark almost immediately.
But, like, they sing and dance, so I have to tune in.
So we still watch it. So, yeah, we think that there's enough to mine in this field, too, that we don't want to just sort of blow it all in one episode. We're going to space it out, and I guess month to month.
You'll have episodes to look forward to in the future of talking about shitty musicals that you're not going to watch. Although I hope that if this segment does anything, it maybe convinces people whose keywords are not singing and dancing that, like, oh, that sounds just weird enough or, like,
right.
just interesting enough that I will put that in my Netflix queue.
Mm-hmm. So those are the two, I guess, big overarching themes of the day. So let's jump right into what the kids like.
All right, Teach, what do the kids like?
So the biggest artists that, you know, I guess if it's a top five, and I put out, you know, at the beginning of each marking period when I had a whole new batch of students, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, I asked them who some of their favorite artists were. The most common responses were Lil Wayne, Meek Mill, a Philadelphia-based rapper, Nicki Minaj, Drake, and then sort of hovering around the periphery of those, like Eminem, Chris Brown, Rihanna, and basically anything that's on top 40 radio. You know the format of urban radio that just plays sort of the same 5 songs for a month. Whatever those 5 songs are, that's what the kids like.
I am shocked that there is a generation of kids who will like both Rihanna and Chris Brown, because lots of people our age
chose sides.
Well, and I don't even know anyone who chose a Chris Brown side.
Right.
Like, I feel like people are like, I like people that I know that like pop music are like, I like Rihanna. Chris Brown is despicable, and he shouldn't be allowed to still have a career, let alone not be in jail.
Right.
But apparently that doesn't bother your kids.
Nope. He's a dance sensation. Oh, the other thing that the kids really like is anything that is like a new hit dance, like an instructional dance. So they love
That's amazing to me, because that's
Dougie,
so like
and they love
1960,
the
right? Like,
yes.
Do the mashed potato, do like... where songs have dance titles in them.
Yeah,
and
yeah. So even though that they may not be... Well, so the maybe the most popular song that everybody loves is LMFAO's Party Rock Anthem.
Party Rock is in the house tonight. Everybody just have a good time.
Yeah.
And we gon' make you lose your mind.
Woo.
Everybody just have a good time.
Clap.
Party Rock is in the house tonight.
Oh.
Everybody just have a good time.
I can feel it.
And we gon' make you lose your mind.
Yeah.
We just wanna see ya.
Shake that.
I've actually warmed to it a little bit over time. Like, of the things that they like, it at least is, I don't know, not screaming obscenities the whole time. And
that's
it's just
because you're
just
like
a dance song.
You're a huge Motown nerd, and you just like that it is the son and grandson of Berry Gordy.
I don't think that registers when I'm listening to it. Like, it doesn't sound anything like Motown.
No.
But there is the Party Rock Shuffle. There is a special dance that goes with it.
Really?
A dance that I'm learning slowly how to do. And since it is a shuffle, it's foot-centric, and I like foot-centric dances.
Not hand-centric ones?
Well, I can do hand-centric
ones. Like cooking?
I can do that too, but anything that's like floor-centric. I can't really get into that much. Well, I'm unable to perform. That's the gist of it. But so they love the Party Rock anthem, and so I think the most interesting part of that song is, well, they're into it because of the instructional dance, and to them, like, they don't recognize the difference between synthesized instruments and live instruments. So that to them sounds like rock guitars did to us when we were a kid, you know? And at least, like, the Party Rock anthem has a melody that you can sing.
That's
which
true.
A lot of the other things don't.
I'm well, a except- big proponent. I mean, I thought that you actually didn't care about melody, because I'm the one who's always like, I need there to be a hook. I want a sung hook in my hip-hop song.
Right. Well, for what I want out of hip-hop, I don't care about the sung melody. But hip-hop is one of many kinds of music that I like. If hip-hop is the only kind of music that these kids like, I want them to know what a melody is, you know?
Right, and maybe want to sing along with something,
right,
which will then translate to them wanting to sing along with something in your class.
Right, right. So finding, like, anything that they can latch on to that's not just, like, shouting curse words, I sort of applaud a little bit. And this also brings up, the kids do like, I mean, since they like Top 40 stuff, some things have slipped in, like Adele, a lot of my kids really like. And we've talked about how, for our purposes, we're glad Adele is doing what she's doing. Like, we're glad that exists in the world. For whatever reason, we don't care about it that much. But for the kids' sake, I'm especially glad that exists. Both in terms of a sound, like, that is real musical instruments being played, and someone with unprocessed vocals singing earnestly and with emotion about, you know, real subjects.
And a woman who is like naked and
trying
to be hot.
Right, as a visual
not
thing.
Not that I don't think Adele is beautiful, but I think she doesn't look like Britney Spears or Nicki Minaj.
Right, or Rihanna.
Right.
You know, who's, and I have a lot of respect for Rihanna, but she does always appear in like half clothes and half skin, whatever it is. So I'm glad that for the girls in my classes that there's someone they can look up to that's not just all skin and auto-tune.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. But then it also came up when I was talking with my students about, you know, what are the different ways that we use music? Like, where are different circumstances that you listen to music? What is the difference between it? And I was trying to get them to think about, like, how the setting of music changes what the music should sound like. So I asked students on a test, like, what are the differences between church music, movie soundtrack music, and music on the radio? And the most common response there was, well, music on the radio's got cursing in it, church music doesn't. So, like, not only is it, like, that the music on the radio has cursing, to them, that's what defines it. That's, like, what they like about it and what they gravitate towards the most. And that sort of brings me to the most popular artist going right now is Meek Mill, who's a Philadelphia-based rapper. He's come up with the Rick Ross Maybach music group, and that's what he got signed to. And we've talked before on this show about the sort of apocalyptic beats that have dominated 2011 and doom hop and hashtag flows, and Meek Mill is definitely very comfortably in that camp, and I think he's fine. Like, I don't think he's not a terrible rapper. He's not bad at rhyming, but it is very coarse. And his mixtape that the kids love the most, like, They'll walk into class and their favorite part is like, I pop a perp, I fuck your bitch.
Got you blowing up a phone while she sucking dick. Yellow bone, hella thick. She know I be getting money like I'm selling bricks. If you gon' tell them something, you should tell them this. Every time them people grab me, I ain't tell them shit. Not a word, but my government. So they can run my name and I be bellin' quick. I'm rollin' around in my town, Southside and Northbound. Don't throw your hoe in that water, we won't say the bitch might drown. I'm getting money right now, strapped up with that pound. Got a sad song on my hip, I swear you don't wanna hear that sound, okay. Yellow Rollie, yellow bezel. Woo. My money on another level, yeah. And my bitches.
Like, that's their favorite thing about what he does.
I can't believe that people thought it was scandalous that when I was a kid, I was singing along to Like a Virgin.
I know.
That seems so quaint.
Yeah, and I keep thinking of when I was that age, and I was, of course, titillated by cursing in songs. Like, I remember when we were in fourth and fifth grade, there was an Offspring song, not a single, but, like, on the album.
A deep cut, an Offspring deep cut that you love.
And it was about road rage, and, you know, there was a breakdown in the song that's like, drivers are rude, such attitude, when I show my peace, complaint sees something's odd, feel like I'm God, you stupid, dumb shit, goddamn motherfucker! And we were like, that is the dirtiest thing we will ever hear. We were like, rewind and listen to that part over and over, but it was actually, you had to look a little bit to find.
I'm racking my brain to think of something filthy when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, there was, like, sexy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of, like, the first song that I loved, the first pop song that I loved that had cursing in it that said, like, shit or fuck.
Yeah. As a sort of reward for the kids after a test that they took on Friday, I brought in Def Jam Rap Star. And even to see them rapping with Get Low, which, you know, Chris Rock has a whole routine about how, like, you know, I grew up with hip-hop, but it's hard to defend now because it's just so, like, you can't defend it intellectually. There's not a social component to it. There's not a political component to it. It's like, to the window, to the wall, to the strep, sweat drops down my balls. Like, by the standards of what the kids are listening to now, like, that even seems almost quaint, or, like, that's even a little bit removed from, like, the literal, like, I don't know, I'm fucking you on the couch right now, or whatever.
Now, I have to say, for me personally, in that list of people that you named, I can take dirtiness from the ladies better than I can from the men, because I feel like it's a way of them sort of taking back
power.
Like, right. I'm much more comfortable with Rihanna singing about cocks, which apparently her, like, new record, which I admittedly have not heard, is full of talking about big dicks and stuff.
Oh, and the single S&M
about, like, liking the smell of sex and like Nicki Minaj, or even, like, back in the day, I'm so much more comfortable with, like, Lil' Kim being really explicit than with a man talking about, like, fuck that bitch or, like, suck my dick. Like, then it seems kind of demeaning.
Yeah.
So I guess my question to you is it just the girls who like that stuff, or do the guys also like Nicki Minaj and Rihanna?
No, it's pretty gendered. Like, boys like boys, girls like girls. There's not a lot of crossover. Well, I mean, the girls like male performers, but they'll gravitate more strongly towards Rihanna and Nicki Minaj. There aren't, the boys don't like that. And even if it's like, because Nicki's pretty hard, and like, so the guys acknowledge that she's good, but they complain if I put that on for too long, like, oh, well, why are you playing all this girl music? With the booming system, top town AC with the coolest system. When he come up in the club, he be blazing up. Got stacks on deck like he's saving up. And he ill, he real, he might got a deal. He pop bottles and he got the right kind of bill. He cold, he dope, he might sell coke. He always in the air, but he never fly couch. He a motherfucking drip, drip, sell her all the strip, strip. When he make a drip, drip, kiss him on a lip, lip. That's the kind of dude I was looking for. And yes, you'll get slapped if you're looking ho. I said, excuse me, you're a hell of a guy. I mean, my, you're like Pelican Fly. I mean, you're so shy and I'm loving your tie. You're like slicker than the guy with the thing on his eye, oh. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Somebody please tell them who the F I is. I am Nicki Minaj. I'm at them dudes up. Back cooped up and trust the dudes up. It's people music. It's made by humans.
How do they feel about, say, like, Monster that has, like, they, lots of dudes in it they can recognize, but Nicki Minaj clearly wins that track.
Yeah. Actually, my students are... The other thing is my students are super impatient. They won't listen to a song all the way through. Like, ever. Even songs, when they pull out their phone to play, like, they want to hear, like, their favorite 30 seconds and then move on to something else. And so in Monster, they're like, why are we even bothering to listen to the not Nicki parts? Like, what is the rest of the song even for? Like, why not just skip ahead to that verse and leave the rest of it behind? Because it doesn't matter. And again, like, the guys recognize that she's really talented and they think that she's, like, legit. Whereas with Beyonce, they're more like, oh, she's corny. That's, like... That's just for girls. They at least can get a little bit behind Nicki Minaj. But the thing that strikes me about it, I'm starting to feel more like Tipper Gore every day, because I'm a huge proponent of, like, free speech, of course, and I defend any artist's right to say whatever they want on record, and, like, I'm used to defending hip-hop's vulgarity and its, you know, rough subject matter, because it's reportage, it's about the life that it emerges from, and it's also sort of like forcing an audience to confront that reality that is not that may not be familiar to many of them. It's, you know, a peek behind the door that you're not supposed to see. But if that's all you're listening to, it really does have a pretty corrosive effect on the way these kids talk and behave. Like, they all curse all the time, openly, at adults. Like, they do that at home, they do that in school, and that would have been unthinkable for anyone our age. Like, you might... Like, in the most frustrated moment, I might curse at a teacher under my breath, but if she, like, caught me doing that, then I'd be mortified. But, like, I'm trying to get my students to be quiet. Like, I'm not going to go on until you stop talking. And my good student will be like, yo, everybody shut the fuck up. He's trying to teach y'all, Nick. Like, and I'm like, what? You're my good student and you're doing that. So, again, like, since it is this... I keep thinking of this proverb, that to a worm and an apple, the whole world is an apple. Like, if all you're listening to is like, I fuck your bitch, I pop a perm, then that's that, you know, you excrete what you consume. It does come out the other side.
But do you think, I'm certainly not defending that kind of music, but do you think that that's what they listen to because that's what their life is like? You know, like, if you live on one of the 10 biggest drug corners in Philadelphia and maybe, like, your older brother is a dealer and, like, you know people who own guns and who are going to pop a perp and, like, mm-hmm. like, I'm wondering if it's a chicken and the egg.
Oh, popping a perp is a drug. That's not shooting someone. A perp is like, I don't know exactly what it does. It's some sort
that
of...
That is how white and uncool I am.
No, it's a pill of some kind, and I think it, like, it may be the modern equivalent of, like, Quaaludes or something.
I don't think it's a totally separate issue, but I'm kind of fascinated with Quaaludes and want to know what happened to them. Because everyone did them, and now I don't think they exist.
Oh, they do. There was I was at a bus stop. I was at the bus stop by my school, and someone asked me where to get ludes.
That's very good. but I guess I just mean, you know...
Oh, but right. Are you saying, is it because they come from that, like, it's speaking to their experience?
Because I think that there were kids in your high school and in my high school who only listened to hip-hop,
mm-hmm.
who did not speak that way, it did not affect them in the same way. And yes, we are from a different generation of hip-hop,
yeah.
but I certainly think that, like, N.W.A. was...
True.
Frightening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, an Ice Cube is still pretty raw.
Well, I don't know how raw you
can be. I mean, not in 2011,
given, like,
but...
Right, are you there yet?
But his 1990s
yes,
records were...
Exactly. But I think that if that's just entertainment to you, if you then go home
right.
to, like, your nice house and your two parents...
Well, and your two parents
listen
to classic rock, and, like, in school they're teaching you, like, classical and jazz music, so you have exposure to other things, and you just choose to listen to, you know, hip-hop as maybe, like, voyeurism or some sort of tourism.
But, you know, if that isn't your life,
yeah.
like, there's a... You can turn that off. Like,
yeah.
that's... But if that is your life, I think it's different.
It's also different because, as we talked about with the, like, year wrap-up in 2010, what is on the radio now is predominantly hip-hop. Like, it's... So even if you just listen to pop radio, like, you are not going to hear a guitar if you listen to pop radio today.
That's true.
Whereas when we were coming up, hip-hop was also really big, but it was one thing alongside other things.
Well, and I'm a little bit older than you are, and when I was coming up, R&B was huge.
Yeah.
You know, like, there was a lot of New Jack that was on the radio. There was a... I mean... I went to high school when, like, Boyz II Men had the biggest song every year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But hip-hop was making inroads to get on the radio
yeah.
In my era. I think it was still pretty, like, frightening. And,
yeah.
you know, in the early 90s, there was, like, some of the best hip-hop ever, arguably, was being made. But I don't think most of that got played on the radio. I mean, maybe if I had grown up in New York City where
mm-hmm.
and, like, you know, Power 97 was on.
Hot 97.
Hot 97. Then it was being played on that station, or, like, you know, WBLS. It was being played on those stations. But here in Philadelphia, I still think it was, even the R&B stations, I think, were very pop R&B, New Jack
yeah.
oriented, and just starting to come around to hip hop.
Yeah.
Whereas
when I was
that's very different from kids today.
Yeah. And I was in middle school and high school when hip-hop was, like, all going platinum, you know, so, like, I was 14 in 1997 that year when, like, Pac and Biggie were shot, but it was also the year that those three huge, like, double albums all went platinum, the Wu-Tang double album, the Tupac double record, you know, the All Eyes on Me and Biggie's Life After Death all went platinum, and they were huge staples on MTV, like, taking up the top spots in the chart. But even then, those were alongside the sort of, like, alternative, or the, you know, the post-alternative, the post-grunge
right.
boom of things. So they were, it was sort of like half and half. But now you have to look hard to find.
You have to go to a classic rock station. And
yeah.
even the, like, big titans of rock, like bands like U2, which... I mean, I don't like U2, but they are inarguably one of the, like, biggest rock bands today. Or Coldplay, right? They
yeah.
just put out a record.
Yeah.
They're not for me, but they sell a shit ton of records.
Yeah.
I think when those records come out, they get played on classic rock stations.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's where guitars go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. They don't get played on urban radio.
But
as
not
far
even
as, like...
I mean, I think pop radio
yeah.
is dominated by... music with beats,
mm-hmm.
Synthesized music with beats. So even if it's not hip-hop, it's Kesha.
Yeah, yeah. Right, and that's the other thing that the kids like is the sort of club dance wing of, like, hip pop. So, like, the David Guettas and Jason Derulo's and, yeah, those are
Tayo
also.
Cruz.
Yeah, Tayo Cruz, exactly. That's all big with the kids.
I know Tayo Cruz was the third one there because I confused the three of those.
Yeah.
People. Like, when I hear a song and I'm like, oh, is that Tayo Cruz? It's like, no, that's Jason Derulo.
Right.
Like, I think they're the favorite.
So that's what takes up the... non-rapping space in their heads.
I wanted to go back to something you said about rapping because you talked about how the kids like Drake.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting to me because he is super soft. You know what I mean? Like, his music is really emotional. He also doesn't sort of fit the mold of, like, you know, street hustler rapper. He was a child actor who's a Jew from Canada. Like, he
yes.
is... super, like, when put up against the hip-hop heroes of, like, when I was a teenager, like, Ice Cube would have fucking killed Drake when I
right,
was a teenager.
Right.
You know, he's like a dude who wears sweaters and writes songs about girls.
Kind of. But, I mean, he's as far as sensitive thugs go, there's more thug than you think. Like, one of the biggest songs with the kids right now is the song called Marvin's Room. And the chorus of that song is...
Fuck that nigga that you love so bad. I know you still think about the times we had. I say fuck that nigga that you think you found. And since you picked up, I know he's not around. Oh, I'm just saying. Tell me, have you heard that lately? I'm just saying you could do better. And I'll start hating only if you make me.
That's the chorus of the song.
But like, yes, there are, that he's saying the N-word and fuck, but he is also talking about, like, that's a romantic sentiment.
Yes, yes. And it's about, like, drunk dialing your ex-girlfriend and saying that, like, she could do better than the guy that she's with now. So it is, like...
Yeah, like, that's...
Thematically...
Super pussy.
Yes. But even... But like, there's prominent cursing in the chorus of his radio singles, is what I'm saying.
No doubt there's cursing, but I'm saying the...
But to the kids, they don't care about, like, where he came from. They just care that it's on the radio and it seems hard to them because it curses.
But I guess what I'm saying is that... Unlike other people who are talking about, like, their drug deal or,
right.
like, the like that gun that they have or, like, something really hard,
mm-hmm.
Drake songs are not about those things. Drake songs are about ladies. Like,
yes.
almost 100% of the time.
Well, 50% about ladies and 50% about how famous he is and how he's dealing with
right.
that.
Right, and not just, like... Because I feel like a lot of Kanye's songs are about how famous he is and how he's trying to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is sort of, like, self-aggrandizing in a
yeah.
great way.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
love Kanye. But, like, in a... Drake, like, I feel like a lot of his songs are, like, emo.
Yeah.
Like, in a hip-hop way. Mm-hmm. And he's saying shit and fuck and the N-word. But, like... The sentiment is really sensitive and, like, how am I going to handle myself? Like, how am I going to know if this is the right girl for me if she, like, just loves me because I'm famous? Like,
right, right.
Which, on the one hand, surprises me that the kids like it. And on the other hand, I think, like, maybe it's good for them to hear an outlet where, like, people are talking about their feelings. And not the feelings of anger, mm-hmm. but the feelings of, like, sadness or sexual longing or, like, feeling confused or, like, those kind of more vulnerable. There's just something vulnerable yes. about Drake
yes.
that in every other artist you just named, there is no vulnerability
except
at all.
The one exception to a couple of things that we've been talking about, there's a song on the new Lil Wayne album called How to Love, and it's just a acoustic guitar ballad that he sings with like a little bit of autotune, but not a ton. It's not like Lollipop. And there's like no drum track. It's just him on an acoustic guitar, and the kids love that song. But that's the only song that they know that has a guitar in it. And it's like,
it's okay,
also
it's
like,
Lil Wayne.
Right. But it's Lil Wayne being sort of sensitive. It's like, a lot of them crooks trying to steal your heart didn't figure it out because you never figured out how to love, how to love. So it's like, he's singing to a girl who's like been wronged by a bunch of other dudes and like, all you're looking for is love. I feel bad for you, girl. Like,
yeah. You had a lot of crooks try to steal your heart. Never really had love, couldn't ever figure out how to love, how to love. You had a lot of moments that didn't last forever. Now you're in a corner trying to put it together. How to love, how to love. For a second you were here, now you're over there. It's hard not to stare the way you're moving your body like you never had a love. Never had love. When you was just a youngin', your looks were so precious. But now you grown up so fly, it's like a blessing. But you can't have a man look at you for 5 seconds.
So, and that's one that the guys and the girls like.
That's very surprising.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly hope the girl that song is being sung to does not think that Lil Wayne is going to be the one to give her the love that she needs. Because I think if we've learned anything, it's that if you have more than one face tattoo, you probably are not a good partner.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a rule of thumb.
But it does make me worry about, like, and it's been happening in not just like on pop radio, but you could also say it's happening in television, just like the coarsening of culture in general, like the kind of stuff that you can see, say, and do on TV and on the radio is like so different than it was even 5 years ago. Like, I mean, not that this is... Oh, this is sort of relevant. I keep talking about 2011 as the year of vomit on TV.
Makes
like,
me very unhappy.
The standard before this year was any vomiting that happens on screen. Like, you see someone go to vomit, but they retch off screen. Or, like, they turn around and maybe you see the after effects. Now it's like people vomit into the lens of the camera.
Yep.
And, like, you always see the vomit coming out of their mouths and, like,
we even
it
saw
happens
a commercial
everywhere.
The other day that was
yeah.
all about someone vomiting.
Like, I'm seriously starting to make it a drinking game at home. Like, anytime you're watching TV, you can play this drinking game, ladies and gentlemen. Anytime, you witness vomit come out of someone's mouth,
yeah, the problem,
take a drink.
The problem is that becomes super interactive, and then there's, like, vomit at home.
That's
because
true.
That's how much vomit there is on TV.
That's true. That would be a synergy. The singularity of vomit. But also, like, they're on basic cable, you can say shit now, and, like, I don't know, as a free speech enthusiast and a First Amendment guy, it's so weird for me to, like, be actively feeling maybe things were better when, like, you couldn't curse openly, or, like, well, it's, for one thing, it's losing its transgressive power, and it also just means, like, a deterioration of basic manners.
But I feel like it really depends what standards are, which ones you're talking
yeah.
about, because in Canada you can curse on any kind of TV. Like, I had when the Osbournes were really popular, I had family members in Canada be like, I don't understand why that show's funny, because they would show it in Canada without any bleeps. And then it's just stupid people talking.
Yeah.
What made it hilarious was that every other word was bleeped out.
Yeah.
And I don't think they have the same kind of problems, the same kind of coarsening of culture in Canada that we have here. Or, you know, in Europe, like when you are in Europe and you're watching a soap commercial, you actually see someone soap up their breasts. Yeah. Like they are naked in a shower because you would be naked in a shower. And it's not titillating. Like, I don't think people are jerking off to soap commercials. I think it's...
Well, I don't think of nudity as coarsening, but...
Well, no, but I think
by certain
that,
standards, I see what you mean,
The people that are, for example, figuring out what can and can't go on TV in this country...
Right, are very concerned.
It's about, like, well, how violent is it? How naked is it? How much cursing is there? And I am way more concerned about how violent it is than how naked it is or how much cursing there is.
Yeah.
And it's always the different stand. I mean, you can watch a show at 8 o'clock on CBS, right? Any of those procedurals.
Yeah.
There, it's all about like, we found semen on the body and like this person was decapitated.
Right.
Like I would so much rather my kids see like someone soaping up their boobs or like saying the word shit on TV than that kind of like super dark, like psychosexual violence.
Right.
That is totally allowed on network television.
Right. And but the other thing about the coarsening that is, I don't know, maybe troublesome, but when you asked before, and I don't think I actually answered, like, do you think the kids listen to it because it is their life, like it is what they come out of? In fifth grade, they're not dealing drugs. It's as abstract to them as it was to us at the time, even though it's in their lives much more than it would have been in ours. Like, they bear witness to it, but that doesn't mean they understand what's going on a lot of times. So they listen to all these songs that are like, I fuck you, bitch, but they don't understand sex any better than we did when we were in fifth and sixth grade. But it does mean that they speak openly about it without any knowledge of what they're saying.
Right.
And that, to me, that's the biggest problem. Like, they don't understand the impact of those words, like they don't understand when those words should be used or what they're describing.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the trouble to me, like you don't know what you're saying. And of course there are like examples of that from our lives, like, you know, when you've talked about singing a song when you were really little that like, you know, your mom asked you, do you know what a virgin is? And you're like, of course I do. And you didn't.
I had no idea.
I remember once, again, back to The Offspring, there was a song where the...
Wow, I think we have learned a lot about how much you love The Offspring in this episode.
In fourth grade. there's a song that in the chorus is like, I hope you like my genocide. And I was like singing along with that once. And my dad was like, don't say that. Like, do you know what that means? I'm like, no. He's like, that's an awful thing to say. Like, hope you like my genocide. And I didn't figure out till many years later what genocide was. And then I was like, oh, okay. I guess that's not the nicest thing to be singing about. So it's not like these kids are so much more terrible than we are. But it's I think
you just answered your own question because you and I both had parents who were like actively involved in like checking in on what we were listening to or what we were watching.
Yeah.
Or
and there would have been more of a generation gap between what we listened to and what our parents listened to. And even though, like, it's been said by lots of pop scholars that for our generation, there's less distance between us and our parents than there were for any generation before.
Absolutely.
Like, the distance between our parents and their parents is enormous. The difference between Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby and Led Zeppelin is a much bigger gulf than the difference between, like, Led Zeppelin and Green Day.
Right.
You know?
Or The Offspring, if it's you.
Yeah. And even if you take it a step further, like, the difference between Led Zeppelin and, like, Snoop Dogg is smaller. Or, I mean, that's a bigger gap than it is with these kids between Snoop Dogg and Meek Mill.
Right.
Or, like, Jay-Z and...
Sure.
Nicki Minaj. Like, there's that's an even smaller generation gap. So these are parents who have grown up, and, like, they just cruise down the street with windows open, blasting music that's, like, cursing all through the neighborhoods. And if someone did that around our block, like, there would have been a neighborhood watch. It'd be like, they should really turn that noise down. So, it's, yeah, that all feeds into it. And it, but it does make me want to, like, celebrate the Adeles of the world that much more. And even, like, last year we were talking about how the new Eminem record is not fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm, like, thrilled that the kids like Eminem because he's, I mean, and he curses some, but that's not the thrust of what he's doing. And he's talking about, like, coming out on the other side of drug problems. And the damage of a life of drugs. And that's important for the kids to be internalizing.
Sure.
If, I mean, to the degree that they're actually internalizing anything.
Right.
Instead of just sort of, like, keeping up with the Joneses and trying to look cool for their peers. Because mm-hmm. that's what middle school is all about, of course. I also wonder, like, if this would be different if I was in a high school as opposed to a middle school. So maybe I'll find that out 1 year soon. We can check back in with what the kids are listening to. But now that we've, like, talked for 45 minutes on this subject, what's going to be our first movie musical?
I thought we would start with what was sort of my first movie musical, which is Grease 2.
Okay.
Also because I know that you've seen it.
Yes.
Because I've shown it to you. Now, I would like to clarify, I had seen many movie musicals before I had seen Grease 2, because when we first got our VCR, yes, that's how old I am, I remember getting my first VCR, my dad went out and rented The Sound of Music and West Side Story. And Mary Poppins, and those are all great movie musicals. And in fact, in many cases, they are Oscar winners. But they're also things that originated on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather talk about movie musicals that did not. Things that were just created for movies to be a vehicle for music.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, there was a great tradition, not just in the 40s of, like, the big MGM musicals, but even through the 60s of things like Sound of Music and Mary Poppins, where, like, those were the Oscar front runners. And though there was the recent Chicago film that was up for a bunch of Academy Awards and did win some, the world of musicals has very much fallen out of favor in the film community.
Right.
And the ones that are made are, like, largely laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
So in keeping
with... Like burlesque.
With, right. So in keeping with the theme of our podcast, In Defense of Lost Causes, I wanted to defend some of these sort of lost, terrible, wonderful treasures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing about Grease 2 is I saw it before I ever saw what my sister and I refer to as Grease 1. Now, Grease 1, excellent. When I was a little kid, I wanted to grow up and marry John Travolta as Danny Zuko. What that says about me, I don't know. And we then...
I would be more comfortable calling Grease 1 classic than excellent. But, and I say this as someone who was Danny Zuko.
But, you know, like, that was a play first that it was... I think it is still the highest grossing movie musical of all time.
More than, like, Saturday Night Fever?
Yes.
Huh.
Well, and Saturday Night Fever, I don't think technically counts in that category because no one's singing.
I guess it's just the soundtrack.
I think that is
right.
That might be the biggest selling movie soundtrack of all time.
Sure.
But I think, you know, there are people who think that people who don't like musicals like Grease, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
It's also super 70s, 80s, you know, it's like big icons. It's got like Vinnie Barbarino and the chick from Xanadu and like people are into that. Grease 2 has none of that. It has a bunch of, I mean, it has Michelle Pfeiffer who has gone on to be a huge superstar.
But she wasn't a big deal.
She was not a big deal then. And you will note that now she never talks about it.
Yeah.
And then it's a bunch of people, the guy who plays her.
It's sort of like Kim Cattrall in like Big Trouble in Little China.
Or Mannequin, if you will. and it takes the, so if Grease was a huge success because it was about this good girl who loved this bad guy, who in the end had to transform herself to a bad girl so he would love her, which is a really fucked up thing to teach your little girl, but at the end when she comes out in her like leather outfit and she's like smoking and she doesn't know how to put out her cigarette. My sister and I used to do that in the house, like pretend to smoke and be like, how do we put it out? Oh, that's how you put it out. Like, those are not necessarily awesome lessons for little girls to learn. Grease 2 takes the opposite tack. It is a dorky exchange student from England, Michael Carrington, mm-hmm. who plays piano and is a good boy and good at school, who loves Stephanie Zanoni, one of the pink ladies, but she's only allowed to date T-Birds, though she has broken up with the lead T-Bird,
right.
Johnny, as played by Adrian Zmed, host of like Solid Gold or one of those like 80s dance shows. And the pink lady who starts to date Johnny, Paulette, is played by Judy Garland's other daughter that's not Liza Minnelli. It's a fabulous cast of like weird second string has-beens. First of all, I thought that when I got to high school, it was going to be a like string of like talent show rehearsals and luau's and like amazing events. I was very disappointed that was not what high school was like at all. And there are these amazing songs, like they go to sex ed class and there's a whole
reproduction.
Let My Stamen Go Berserk.
Turns its life into a circus of debauchery. Now you see just how the stamen gets its lusty dust onto the stigma, and why this frenzied chlorophyllous orgy starchy spring is no enigma. We call this quest for satisfaction of what class?
A photoperiodic reaction.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's very good.
Hey, I'm lost. Where are we?
Chapter 2.
Page 5.
Pistol right here.
Where does the pollen go?
Like, that is amazing.
Yeah.
It also, the guy who plays Goose is the guy who is the shitty husband in Thelma and Louise. Like, it's all these people who would go on to have, like,
legit
tiny roles and things, or, like, weird second careers, aside from Michelle Pfeiffer, who's obviously a huge movie star. I believe the sort of pinnacle of the movie is when Michael keeps asking Stephanie out and she's like, when are you gonna get it? And he's like, what? And she's like, I only date a cool rider. And she sings the
cool
song
rider,
right, about how she wants a motorcycle man who's gonna sweep her off her feet,
right.
And
gotta be fast, gotta be tough, gotta be down for the fight. No,
that's
sorry.
I Need a Hero from Footloose, which is also a fantastic movie musical, and I don't think we should talk about that one until we see the new one that I sadly want to see. But, you know, Grease 2 has lots of weird gender stereotypes in it, but it loves... It comes from the same era of, say, Grease 1 and Happy Days, which is the late 70s, early 80s obsession with all things 50s, early 60s. This movie takes place during the Kennedy administration, and so each of the pink ladies, there's one pink lady who looks like Jackie Kennedy, and then there's one pink lady who looks like Marilyn Monroe, and they actually have a talk about it at the lockers where they're like, the gossip magazines say JFK secretly prefers the looks of Marilyn Monroe. And Stephanie Zanoni's really uncomfortable on the first day of school because she wore pants because she spent her whole summer giving lube jobs at the old man's service station. But then she has to put on a skirt because girls in school in 1962 are only wearing skirts.
Yeah.
But she really wants a bad boy. So Michael Carrington starts writing papers for all the T-Birds to earn money so he can have a motorcycle.
Right.
And then he disguises himself after a fabulous dance number in the bowling alley.
Mm-hmm.
He disguises himself.
Isn't that weird, like, in heaven part, too?
Oh.
What's that?
Well, that's fabulous because here's what happens. He disguises himself as the cool rider she describes. And she can't recognize that it's him because he's wearing goggles.
The greatest disguise ever.
It's amazing.
Just like a fake mustache.
And he sort of has that Christian Bale Batman voice. Like, he comes and takes her for a ride and she's in love with him and does not recognize that it's the dorky British guy from school.
Yes.
Because he talks like this. So the T-Birds get very upset because she's not supposed to date guys out of the T-Birds. And they sort of, like, chase him on the night of the big talent show.
Right.
And he jumps, out into a cliff and apparently dies. And they make, and Stephanie sees the whole thing and gets very upset, but her pink lady friends make her go to the talent show. And when everyone else is singing Girl for All Seasons in elaborate costumes that they've made all year long, she comes out dressed like a Christmas tree, cannot sing, and instead sings a song about her dead motorcycle lover who she's never seen without goggles. And the star on top of the Christmas tree floats away, and all of a sudden you are in biker heaven, and they are singing to each other. And she's like, it all seems so unfair. Just when I found you, I lost you. And they sing. She wins the talent show with her...
by going into a weird coma.
Yeah, with her, like, break from reality.
Yeah.
She wins the talent competition, which means that she is queen of the luau. And at the luau, he comes to the luau in his cool rider outfit, and she can't believe it's him. How is he still alive? And he takes it off, and everyone's like, it's Michael. I can't believe it's Michael. And then they all sing We'll Be Together.
Yes.
The big final song of the show. Now, first of all, I think what appealed to me as a kid, and we rented this movie so many times that they offered to sell it to my father, who did not believe in owning VHS tapes. So we would just go back and rent it again and again and again. But I think what appealed to me was that the, like, girl was the cool one.
Yeah.
As opposed to Grease 1, where, like, she was fucking lame.
Right, right.
And, like, went to the drive-in with Danny and he tried to touch her boob and she freaked out. Like, Stephanie Zanoni was way faster than
Michael. And Sandra Dee is, like, enough of a lame character that... that name stands in for prudish girl as a reference. Like,
right.
You call someone Sandra D and it, like...
Yeah. And so this had sort of like the cool, naughty girl who...
Corrupting
the dorky British
nebbish
guy.
Dude, right.
Also, I don't believe that any movie with some pillowy-lipped British guy... Like, I don't believe a world where he can't get laid. Like, in any high school in America right now, there are 50 girls waiting to sit on that guy's face.
Mm-hmm.
But that's cool. He needed to put on some goggles and pretend to be a cool rider. The music is hilarious.
Yes.
It has amazing cameos by teachers. Like, Tad Hunter comes in to play the science teacher in the reproduction scene.
Mm.
And everyone has a big crush on him. And he's a huge, like, 60s heartthrob from beach movies who came out as gay. So he's in the... He's sort of... playing on that image. What's her name, who is Connie Stevens, who married Eddie Fisher after Elizabeth Taylor and Debbie Reynolds. Yeah. She's in it as one of the teachers that, like, has huge breasts and all the boys love. And it's just so charming, and it feels so bad, but it's bad in a way that is totally appropriate for an 8-year-old girl to think that people are bad. Like, they smoke cigarettes and make out with boys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there, it's this great, like, disco era understanding of the early 60s. And it sort of explains to me why I'm obsessed with nostalgia. Like, it's a movie that's nostalgic for another time, made in a time that in my lifetime I've been nostalgic for. Like, it's fabulous. If you have not seen Grease 2, if you've only seen classic Grease, I highly recommend you check it out. It's crazy.
It is.
Michelle Pfeiffer is beautiful. Like, she has never looked more beautiful than in that movie. Her voice is terrible, but who cares?
And I do think, like, Grease 2, because it's so silly, is more fun than the first Grease.
We didn't even talk about the part where they go in the bomb shelter and the guy tries to get his girlfriend
to do it for our country.
To do it with him because it's the Cuban Missile Crisis.
We have to repopulate the Earth
And they say it's a musical number about let's do it for our country.
That part is hilarious.
If that does not convince you to see this movie, I don't know what will.
Just think about it. It would be like as if we were doing it for the Statue of Liberty, or the Grand Canyon, or the New York Yankees. It would be like as if we were doing it for Disneyland. Yeah, let's do it for our country. Red, white, and blue.
Patriotic doing it.
Yes.
By high schoolers.
There is a line in that song where they actually say, it'd be like we were doing it for Disneyland. Like, that's fabulous.
That's pretty amazing. Well, I think that's a pretty full episode. We're going to try to be better about not going another 3 months before we do another one.
We have
one
vacations
of these.
Coming up.
Yeah.
So
maybe we'll do the next one, like, Christmas.
Yeah.
Do a Christmas episode.
Give you a stocking stuffer.
A stocking stuffer. Perfect.
And we can talk about our year-end favorites.
Okay. That sounds good. So, signing off, it's Brian.
And Rebecca.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening.